Welcome to Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 9, titled Adaptation. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I really liked the Charlie Kaufman-inspired flavor that was injected in this episode. It was quite something. I don't know, stop me if I sound too crazy, but I thought this was a genuinely good episode of The Walking Dead from start to finish. It had... everything. I think there's a little bit of some rocky road that we got here to like this place in Negan's development. And I still think it's kind of annoying that we don't know what the hell is going on as far as the key conflict amongst the groups. But I really, really enjoyed it. There was a lot of tension. There was a lot of, I thought the Whisperers continue to be a creepy addition and like a truly alien kind of thing that they've introduced into The Walking Dead that's like makes a certain amount of twisted sense. Unlike the trash people, I was always waiting for that to them to turn that corner. But yeah, they're doing a pretty good job at integrating the new folks. I kept on noting throughout the episode places where the old Walking Dead would have gone wrong. For example, I think this happens in Season 7, and you just have a whole episode of Negan fucking around, finding himself.
Mm-hmm. Maybe three episodes, who knows?
Maybe three episodes, but there's a lot of stuff where, like, when they're doing... Everyone's kind of eulogizing Jesus. Like, it's rare to see an episode pause and like watch people's reaction to someone important dying. Usually it's some faceless mook that gets offed and then everybody's making shit up about them, or someone dies in like this frantic situation and everyone just has to move on. So like, I really like it. I think this is it's not the greatest television ever made, but it's a solid, good episode. What'd you think?
I didn't have any major problems with it. I think it does engage in some of the, Walking Dead-isms of past. I don't know how in the world Judith was able to find Negan outside of the gates. Who let her out? Is Lori back and running a daycare center here? I have some problems with where they might be going with Aaron and Michonne as far as the moralizing potential. But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good episode. I enjoyed watching Negan go and survey, you know, his old home and see that, okay, Judith is right. There's nothing out here for me. The world has moved on without me. And now it looks different. And now, you know, he's kind of up in the air. Like, what is his new life going to be? Does he want to go back and just be a prisoner? Does he want to go back and try and reintegrate into this society? And that's going to be a long road, obviously. But yeah, it's got some good stuff that it's doing. Along with, you know, maybe a couple of Walking Dead ingredients in the mix that aren't quite as tasty.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to see what they do with Negan. Like, are they going to do some kind of like work release program?
Yeah,
where he can go out under debt, you know, and he's under like light guard, and he can, you know, cultivate tomatoes and do physical labor and help the community, and then he goes back and gets tucked into the prison at night. And then how long does that last until he gets potentially paroled for good behavior? I mean, these are like super exciting questions. And I'm also interested in seeing like the different ways that the kids are growing up. Like, they showed the kind of callow, protected youth of Hilltop. You see a fucked up way to grow up in this Lydia, you know, Whisperer woman, if she's even telling the truth. You've got Henry, who is a good and virtuous and strong person, but he's just wretchedly naive. And then you've got Judith. I think all this stuff is inherently interesting, and they're not like constantly making me slap my head and think how stupid things are. In fact, there's a little, you know, it's like, I thought it was interesting where, you know, Michonne's like, hey, I got to get You know, and at first you think this is just like, well, I've overstayed my welcome. This is just hilltop awkwardness. And like people kind of raise their eyebrows. And then she says, no, I just, you know, Alexandria has to be warned about this new startling development among zombies. And everybody's like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Because it fucking does. Mm-hmm. You know, she would be remiss if she didn't go back to her community and say, hey, there are intelligent, quote unquote, zombies. Hear me out. Because the way you handle those is got to be different than the way you handle a standard herd of walkers, as we saw in this episode mm-hmm. and previous episodes. So I'm excited to see what ends up happening here. And I'm genuinely looking forward to next week's episode.
I mean, if next week's episode is the community fair, I'm genuinely looking forward to it. 'Cause there's some great developments on that front here. Like I can't even wait for this fair, and I know it won't be next week. It'll be the end of the season, but
we're not going to get the 2-man band if it's next week, you know, because they got waylaid by whisperers.
Yeah, we got to get Symphony of Awesome in there.
Well, see, there's the key, Symphony. You just bring all the whisperers on board. They just need a hobby.
Okay, yeah, get them in a choir. You get,
like, yeah, like what's a big band? Wasn't like Chumbawamba like had 30 people in it? Like you get a Chumbawamba style.
Sure.
You know.
That's about the caliber I think we can expect of the Renaissance Fair.
They wouldn't even have to change their costumes. Just, you know, take off the zombie mask, come as you are, do some tub thumping.
That's not Chumbawamba. Come as you are is different band. Okay, let's get into the recap. We start off with Aaron putting Jesus down for good as they all make their way out of the graveyard. This kind of picks up exactly where we left off last episode. And then completely competent headband bow girl saves Michonne's life. There's not a lot to this scene, but Jesus is definitely dead.
It's funny because when they showed his face and it looked like there was some blood trickling still out of his chest wound, and there was like all this lightning thundering, and I kept on going back to like the Frankenstein, like, he's alive. I'm like, oh my God, he is. He's going to be wide open with this if not. And then Aaron pikes him and I'm like, he's actually dead, which again, progress of the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And then I thought they're going to leave Jesus, which I thought was pretty brutal. But they pick him up and go. What are we going to call these guys? The Whisperers, I guess.
I thought what they're called in the graphic novels. I was trying to avoid using that name because I don't know.
It's the accurate label for them.
They haven't
said whispering.
It.
Yeah, they're zombies. They're whispering. In fact, yeah. I wonder in universe, because again, I haven't read the comics. I wonder if that's what the Whisperers call themselves, or if that was kind of like the Walker label that, like, well, what do you call them? They're whispering walkers. They're Whisperers.
Yeah, I haven't read the comic books for that part of the story either, mm-hmm. so I don't know if like that's just a colloquialism among the survivors, or if they call themselves that, but.
But I wondered when this guy was at the front of the walker pack and he kind of like slyly unlocks the gate, which I thought was pretty cool and creepy. But it made me think of like all the scenes we've seen of zombies like on the front line, like beating down a door or whatever. And there's like 100 zombies behind him. They're pushing. We've always said like that's actually surprising a lot of force. And in real humans, it's dangerous to be up front. Like, you know, have you ever seen one of those horrific videos of like a structure fire and there's too many people in for the exits and they get crushed up against the doors? You literally get crushed to death. I wonder how many Whisperers have died because they accidentally, it's like, oh, I'm going to get up here and lead the zombies to, oh, wait, I can't. Oh, there's no lock here. Oh, and then they just become real walkers.
Yeah. Can you imagine that? You kill a walker and it's wearing a walker skin as a mask. What must you think?
They're evolving. They're
to
evolving.
Wear each other's skin. Ugh.
Yeah, they have adaptations. It is weird because I just can't wait to get more insights into the culture and like the religious practice of these. Because like what Lydia said in this episode is pretty batshit, you know. But makes a certain kind of sense. So I just wonder, like, are they philosophical about? Because if you fuck up, like go and scratch your nose the wrong way, or you imagine if you stub your toe on a rock and you're like, God damn it, and then the herd just turns on you, tears you apart.
Yeah.
Like, where's they protect us, we protect them there. I'm very curious to see if any of that stuff is addressed, or just getting to know more about this culture.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where they take these characters, because the potential I see here and the potential they're kind of hinting at is the ability to round up a whole bunch of walkers and turn them into a herd. And you can see with an intelligent force behind that, how the walker herds could get truly enormous and could be truly devastating to communities. So I wonder if there's going to be some grand battle like we saw at the prison, right, with tanks and stuff, except this time it's all herd.
Yeah, and the herd can do feints and counterattacks and pincher maneuvers and outflank you. Like, it's potentially terrifying. It's like necromancy, you know?
Yeah, in a way, for sure.
It's like some Armies of the Dead action going on here.
All right, then we go to Negan celebrating his newfound freedom by eating a tomato from the Alexandria Gardens. He goes into
That's a Carl Dream tomato that he's eating.
Really?
I mean, the symbolism is rich. Yeah, I remember we talk about that Rick's the Carl's dream tomato getting crushed beneath someone's foot in the earlier episode. This is Negan eating, partaking of Carl's dream tomatoes, and I don't know. I don't know where the symbolism is there, but they look juicy.
So he goes into Michonne's house, disguises himself, apparently waits for daylight, I guess. I don't know. He goes in darkness, he comes out in daylight and tries to hop the fence. Judith catches him, gives him a speech at gunpoint about why she should let him go. And she lets him go when he promises not to hurt anyone. And she also lets him keep the compass that he stole.
Yeah, I thought this is a lot of good stuff here. Like, he breaks into the Grimes house. He's wearing Rick's signature outfit, the jeans and the tan shirt. Yeah. You know, and you can tell he's doing it kind of like in a sense of irony or even cruelty, but then, like, his heart's just never in it. Like, when he sees Judith's picture and sees, like, all the Grimes family and, you know, my family will always be there. He just, like, every bit of this episode tells you the story of a man who realizes that this just isn't the path for him, but he's got to see for himself, you know, because also he thinks, he also realizes his 10 by 10 cell is not a life for him either. So I know that you have a problem with Judith being too big for her britches. This gun, way too big for anyone's britches.
Sure.
This cannon's bigger than she is. What did you think about their confrontation?
I mean, this is adults writing for children poorly. I just think Judith is too witty, too insightful, too all the things that writers want to be. Whenever she opens her mouth in this show.
Well, it's two things. I think, number one, she reminds me a lot of my oldest niece, because they're about the same age. They stomp around in cowboy boots, and they talk real sassy and real adult. And two, I noticed this episode that she has a lot of, like, Lori in her. I thought the way they cast her, where she just really looks and even kind of sounds a little bit like the dearly departed burrito fest throwing Lori. And I enjoyed that bit of casting.
How would she get any of Lori's qualities?
Why? Like, what do you mean?
I get that
she's half Lori, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, for sure. But also, she's never known her mother. Like,
oh, I don't know. Do you think, man, it's nature versus nurture, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, plus she was raised by people who knew Lori, and I wonder how many times she's heard from her dad from Michonne.
Her dad is literally the only one who knew Lori, I think.
No, Michonne did. Like, Lori didn't die till the prison season, and Michonne was with them since the second half of season two.
Yeah, I guess she knew her for a little bit.
For a little bit.
Michonne's very different. I don't know. It strikes me as a little odd that she would know, that she would act like her mother based on any kind of stuff we've seen in the show. But yeah. Maybe it's the nature thing. Maybe, you know, you get the genes. You get the genes. Don't let her behind the wheel of a car. That's all I know.
Just put your hand on that python and, like, all the ancestral knowledge of the Grimes family flows into her. Like some kind of magic sword.
So this guy, who I know his real name, I'm not going to use it, Stradivarius, roams.
I called him the professor. I was calling him the professor throughout the notes. I thought that's a pretty good nickname.
Professor Stradivarius roams the hilltop as Tara,
even better,
Enid, and some others plan to go out and look for Michonne and Jesus and the rest. And the professor volunteers to help them look. He is seriously going to make a two-hand Luke joke in a community that includes Aaron. This Ooh. Motherfucker. He insensitive, at least.
I thought he said cool hand. He was making a cool hand Luke.
I thought he said two-hand Luke, which I know cool maybe, hand Luke is a maybe thing, he but was. I...
Right. Maybe he was.
Maybe I misheard.
Two-hand Luke. That is pretty cruel. did you finally see the bicycle-powered clothes washing machine?
No, I missed it.
Oh, he slapped at the seed. Man, I was so excited to see the return of the... It's out in front of the mansion, so I feel like it's the community's... That's the laundromat. It's just it. Uh-huh. It's just a washing tub with a... and instead of putting in quarters, you have someone ride it for you. Nice. I don't know. I like, first of all, Professor Stradivarius sounds like a character from a Call of Cthulhu role-playing game session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the one that has all the arcane knowledge. But I like how this group is trying to make themselves useful right away. And Luke is the one, the professor is the one that is probably the not most useful one of the group. And he's trying to make himself that. And Boston Rob will mount up with him. What a guy.
Mm-hmm.
What a guy.
Yeah, and it just so happens that they're both slam pieces of two of the women in the community, which will come into play later.
Yeah.
So we go back to
the boy toys.
What's that?
The boy toys are off on their own.
They sure are. So Michonne's group keeps running with the corpse of Jesus in tow. Michonne tells Daryl that she vouches for the new survivors, and he's cool with it. He apologizes for not giving her closure on Rick's disappearance, and she thanks him for at least trying. Aaron tries to process the death of Jesus while the walkers follow them.
You know, what's interesting is because like when I was watching this and I crept on here and Michonne saying this is going to mean a lot to them, I'm like, this is pretty cold blooded that she's using Jesus' body like a chit to be traded. But then I realized by the end of the episode that what she's really saying is like what the difference between the body of your leader and being able to lay him to rest and what happened with them and Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, okay, well, this makes sense because Michonne's never seemed like she's a particularly cruel asshole. But I'm glad they were going for that direction instead of because I'm like, geez, this like Michonne, this X-shaped scar on her back has really, really fucking changed her. But
still no word on that stuff.
Yeah. And Daryl, what do you make of because she says to him, "I'm sorry." Daryl says, "Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't do that for you," which completes the circle, and she says, "I'm sorry for the both of us. I thank you for trying, and then for the after."
Yeah.
And then Daryl squeezes her shoulder. I don't think there's a romantic comfort relationship here. This has to be related to, oh my God, Daryl donated a kidney to her. That's exactly what happened.
I suppose so, but what happened?
Like Sadiq did a kidney transplant somehow.
I guess you're right.
Huh.
Yeah.
I think I just figured it out. But why would that? But they've always made it seem like that's something that like split the community.
Maybe Maggie needed one too. Daryl only had one to give.
Daryl has no kidneys now. He just gave them both. He's got a water bottle full of charcoal for a kidney now, which is why he's super anti-alcohol when he's talking to Henry. It all makes sense, Jim. Mm-hmm. He's a double donator. He doesn't give a shit. Amazing. All right. We got to figure it out. We've cracked the code.
Okay. The group manages to take a hostage from the disguised walkers. That's kind of it. I like the tactics they use here. Daryl's aiming for the knees, trying to determine which one is a human because they will scream.
Yeah. And then as soon as they do, the pack turns on you. That's pretty fucking brutal. That's pretty brutal. It's amazing they are able to take one alive because these people are fierce, feral, zombie people.
I was a little disappointed that they just leave the knives on the ground. Like, that's blacksmith was going to be pissed off, right?
Yeah, it's one more. It's one less knife he has to make for sure.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to delay the grand opening of Outback Hilltop Edition for sure.
Uh-huh.
I wonder also, so again, I'm fascinated by this whisper culture. She seems like she instantly goes into scared little girl mode, but this has got to be all just an act.
Yeah, so like I, so much of this feels like an act to me, and by the end of the episode, I'm still thinking like, who's playing who here?
Yeah, and I think that they're like, there's this kind of cult that's like, you know, people are just bad, and they're the same as zombies, and here's how you treat zombies, and here's how you treat people, and the only people who are real people are the ones in our group. It's pretty chilling shit. Because I honestly, when they started like commiserating, Henry and Lydia started commiserating at the end, I started thinking like, oh, well, maybe there is some humanity in this girl. And then you see this giant, ginormous pack of whisperers, and you know she's been lying about it the whole time. Man, I think this was really cool.
Yeah, that last scene is really good, actually. But we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
So Negan relishes the fresh air of freedom, and he slays a couple walkers. He also drinks some really bad stream water and gets sick. Two vomits this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan, but okay. I get it.
Yeah, on-screen vomiting, like, I guess that's my killing dogs. Like, yeah. I know I've seen worse, but, like, boy, every single time.
I mean, David Thewlis, is it David Thewlis from Fargo Season 2?
Yes, yes.
He's vomiting in the toilets, and they full-on show it. It's terrible.
Yeah, and his teeth, and that's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, no one also, like, takes a swig of water afterwards or nothing. I'm going to just sit with the sick taste in my mouth. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
In this case, I don't know that you want to take a swig of water afterward.
That's true, if you're Negan, yeah. Well, I mean, you can always, like, is it, like, I've always wondered, like, if you were, like, dying of thirst or just really thirsty, you're not dying of thirst, and you're in the water and you see some water, can you, like, take a mouthful of that and just kind of hold it in your mouth, swish it around, spit it out? Like, do you get contamination just from that surface contact, or do you have to actually swallow it? Because I feel like there is like this kind of like a little bit of like refreshment you get from just swishing your mouth with some cool water that maybe you don't have to gulp it down. But I'm also, I guess, a little surprised that people this long in the zombie apocalypse haven't gotten, you know, a little bit more resistance to those internal parasites.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because we're certainly capable of drinking water like that. It's just our bodies aren't used to it because we grew up on chlorinated and fluorinated water. So
I wonder, they must be using rain collection systems in the communities, right?
I don't know. Or they, I mean, it's fairly easy to, like, you can build like big scale filtration systems.
Yeah, that too.
I've seen like, you know, small scale, like the ones where it's like, you know, you filter it through like sand and shit. And then, but I guess, yeah, maybe they boil it. I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. I haven't really taken note of their water purification or collection systems.
That's what I'm saying. I wish this was a bit more like Star Trek, where, like, you know, every week there was a new little gadget and they'd do a brief explanation of it and it would be useful in an episode. Like, I think Walking Dead could do that. Like, hey, look at this bicycle-powered washing machine. Just give it a little demonstration, and Maggie or Jesus can be like, hey, good work there, Hank. We're going to increase our laundry efficiency by 50%. I really appreciate it. Give him an attaboy. And, yeah, like, I need more of that. Shirt? Yeah.
You're looking ripe. How about you get on this thing? I probably still wouldn't notice the washing machine, honestly, even if they did that.
See, there's two different audiences. I want the technology. You just want the hard-hitting zombie action.
Oh, yeah. I like this crispy walker, speaking of hard-hitting zombie action. This one that's been pretty obviously superficially burned. I don't know how this works, because we've talked about, you know, in the past,
dude,
how people die and they don't become walkers in the sun inside of a locked car. And yet someone who is set on fire, obviously, turns into a walker.
Yeah. And like, I thought that we've also been established that walkers, like, exposed to, like, you know, if you catch a zombie on fire, they can walk around or whatever. But like, an sustained inferno, just boils their brain. So these people were charcoal.
Yeah.
Like breaking off and shit. I don't know how that works, but it's a really cool, gruesome shot. So absolutely. I guess we'll let it. Maybe that's the real evolution adaptation. Zombies have just slowly developed a, you know, heat resistance somehow, even though they don't reproduce.
Sure. Yeah. You could probably use some of that. Maybe like grind up some zombies and stick them in the walls of your house for insulation. That'd probably be pretty good. Yeah,
it's very Negan, but sure. Yeah, I don't know. Do they generate heat with their movement? Like, I know they're not 98.6ing, surely. Surely don't have the metabolism for that, but
probably not, no. All right, next up, Michonne and the rest arrive back at the hilltop with Jesus' corpse. People want Tara to get justice for his death. And Daryl tells Henry that Jesus is dead, and they begin interrogating their prisoner. Not Henry, because Henry is also a prisoner. They don't interrogate him.
Where did you get the alcohol? Where are you sneaking off to? Yeah. Daryl's going to go to work on him after he gets done with Lydia here, if that is her real name, which it almost certainly is not.
When they get back, I can't help but think what a bad trade they've made. And this is a pattern that I see repeating. Them losing a member outside of the gates, sending a search party, and coming back weaker than they were before. Like, you just traded a Jesus for a Eugene. That's the worst. Like, if you were trading Pokemon and you traded away your Pikachu for, like, a fucking Squirtle, I don't know, or a Mr. Hands, whatever the fuck that guy is.
A Rattata, yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. People are going to look at you and go, that was a terrible trade. This is a terrible trade.
Yeah, yeah. Jesus is the shiniest of Pikachus. Here, but I'm going to defend it.
Okay.
If you're going to espouse the shit that, like, the Alexander and Hilltop people espouse, where, like, you know, broadly speaking, all men are created equal and inalienable rights and stuff and such, like, you can't say that some lives are more important than others, because that way leads to aristocracy and despotism. Well, here's the other thing.
You don't have to say it. It's just evident. It's self-evident.
Eugene, like, they say that Eugene is kind of like the brains behind, like, their windmill, their water mill, their bullet reloading system. Like, you know, if you got a high school science education, then you're ready to contribute in this society, and apparently no one else does. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think ethically they have to, and then Eugene's a little bit more useful than you'd think as far as, like, the brains of technology and kind of, like, rebooting civilization standards. It can get you in trouble, which is, I think, Michonne's whole fucking point.
Exactly.
Like, why are we trying to do all this trading and shit when we can be a self-sustaining company behind these walls, and then we're safe and protected? Like, every time people go out for a jar of baby food and two people die, what the fuck? You know, so, like, that's some of this stuff is making more and more sense.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense why Aaron would change his mind about it after having this experience.
Yeah, especially since him and Jesus, like, you know, I don't know that they were lovers, but they were certainly close and simpatico and very good friends. So, mm-hmm. You know, it hitting really close to him home, I could see him having that kind of, maybe it's going to be a knee jerk, because I also don't think that Aaron's the type of guy who's just going to preach isolation forever. We'll see.
I mean, yeah, that's what I'm worried about, is we're going to have another couple seasons of moralizing over.
But see, that's this new if it's a political process. Like, imagine if there's parties within Alexandria, you got isolationists and expansionists. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like moralizing, but it's also something where you can play politics, you can recruit people. If you just got one crazy guy that vacillates between you can't kill everyone,
well,
you
that's
gotta clear
the
everything.
Key, right? It's the vacillation. Yeah. It's going back and forth and back and forth and just, like, being so wishy-washy about it. That's the moralizing that I know, and I hope that we won't start that.
If Aaron keeps doing that, I'm going to start calling him Mr. Burr after his Hamilton namesake.
Yeah.
Take a stand, man. Come on.
Yeah, talking about that on our off-the-clock podcast, so check that out. All right, moving on. Negan searches a clothing store, finds a leather jacket to replace his old one, as well as a pack of wild dogs who chase him into a shelving unit. Eventually, they lose interest. He sprints out the back exit, leaving his stolen supplies behind. But he has one jacket richer.
He is.
So he's making some bad trades, too.
I'm surprised he didn't. Two things. Surprised he didn't go back and get Lucille this episode. Mm-hmm. Also surprised he didn't walk out of that store with a baseball bat. Because it was a sporting goods store, right? Surely. Although, I guess in a zombie apocalypse, you'd think that they loot, like, any kind of, like, melee weapon. That would be one of the first things to go. Like, axes, baseball bats, etc. But
I thought it was hilarious that, like, 95% of the clothing in there is looted. What about the other 5%? Is it just too ugly, like,
or just not the right size for the people coming through? Or but even then, you're right, like,
the communities aren't out there grabbing it.
Yeah, if I find a long sleeve medium in the zombie apocalypse, I'm thinking, ooh, base layer.
Sure, yeah.
I don't just leave it there because it's a little tight. It's really constricting my boobies. Now I'll stretch that shit out and it'll be my warm base layer. Boy, speaking to people that get pissed off about dog deaths, Negan throws a raging zombie at these three. And here's the thing. I don't think one zombie can take out a dog pack. I really don't.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know that a zombie could take out a dog, much less like a German Shepherd, Alpha, and his like two stalwart companions. Like, I don't know. This whole like the walker growls, you hear, raw, 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 and then the dogs fall silent. Like, get the fuck out of here. Maybe they ran off. Maybe like, you know, fuck this. Yeah. Fuck this rotten meat. We're out of here. But yeah, I thought this is, like I said, pretty good action scene. First like non-zombie action scene I can think of. And one other thing, were these real dogs or CGI?
I assume they were real dogs.
Because they got a performance out of one of them. Like when they were peeling off, that I like, it was a little uncanny valley, and it's so dark and grainy that I couldn't tell. But I'm wondering if like some of those shots, they did a little bit of like Babe Pig in the City, and like they had a real dog, but they composited and had him like look around or, mm-hmm. you know, signal the other dogs. But it worked.
That's like a TikTok filter or something, right? They could just do that now by pointing a camera at the dog.
That's true. That's true. They hold their iPhone in front of the camera,
right?
and then shoot the screen. That's what they use for their effects. It's the only thing that makes sense.
So I actually like what they're doing with Negan in these scenes. You know, he's out in this world. He thinks he's about to make his comeback, his triumphant return, and then he sees these people along the way who clearly were on their own, had no support, and blew their brains out because of it. That's him now, right? Once he gets back to Sanctuary, he's going to realize that. And this guy he sees in the sporting goods store is a representation of who he is now and his potential fate if he chooses that destiny. And I think it's pretty good, like, visual non-exposition storytelling. I liked it.
Yeah. Just his costume. He starts off as Rick Grimes, and he slowly, piece by piece, rebuilds himself into Negan, and just finds it just doesn't fit. And this doesn't feel like home. Yeah, it's really fucking good. Like I said, pretty good episode.
All right. Professor Stradivarius and Boston Rob decide to form a band called Symphony of Awesome, consisting of one kazoo player and a vocalist. can't wait. Can't fucking wait.
Well, it's been 15 years since new music has been made, so people are ready for it.
It's true.
Right kazoo and the right vocals, oh boy.
All they've heard is
up the charts.
What was Jesus playing in the Hilltop, one of Georgie's records? It was like this really old...
Yeah. I can't remember what it was. Yeah. An odd choice.
They've not heard anything since that, apparently. Mm-hmm. Their plans are nearly ruined when their kazooist is grabbed by a pair of walkers and Boston Rob has to save him. He realizes that the arrows they've been finding are Yumiko's breadcrumb trail. She's... Mm-hmm. supposedly leaving them a trail here to find them.
That's very competent bow girl if you've been, just listening and not watching at home.
Yeah, right. So they spot a herd moving south and have to decide whether to turn back or keep going.
Boston Rob, what a spear throw. Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, a 10-yard throw, and he hits the dude right fucking in the O-ring of his head. Damn. Mm-hmm. But I don't like how they're carrying these spears on these horses. Like, I just kept on seeing, like, the spear is like attached to the front of his saddle, and it goes, the tip is right at wrist level, and the way he's holding the reins, his wrist is like within inches. Like, if that horse jerks his head into some direction, he's like wrist slit. I don't know how you properly carry a spear. I don't think I've ever seen like someone with a spear sling. It seems like everyone always just kind of carried them in medieval times, and like when I see like Native Americans portrayed on the plains, I don't know if there's a great way to carry these spears without hurting anybody, but this ain't it. Maybe sling it on your back or something.
Wouldn't you want to carry it vertically? Like,
that's what they, yeah, but like, but maybe, or maybe cover the spearhead so it's not like sharp right there in your face. But it gave me a lot of flashbacks to like, there's a scene where in like the season 3 or 4 where Glenn was riding shotgun with a shotgun, and he had the shotgun between his legs and kind of pointed at his head, and they're going down a bumpy road. And I'm like, well, this is just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, yeah.
So kind of, same thing. Not quite as explosive, but same thing. Same energy.
Sure. There's a pact made here where Boston Rob is going to sing at the fair if they find more arrows. And they do find more arrows.
I do like that he's got the professor here has got the subdued kind of Jack Black energy from School of Rock. It's like Jack Black from School of Rock on half of Valium or something.
Uh-huh.
You know? He's a little bit mellow, a little less, a little lower energy, but he's got that same kind of vibe to him.
For sure. So then the interrogation team manages to get absolutely nothing out of their prisoner. Afterward, Michonne says she's leaving first thing tomorrow, and Tara says the new survivors can stay in Hilltop. Also, Daryl promises to get the prisoner to talk.
It's really... And I kind of like how they show, like, it's impossible to get good information if you're just interrogating one person. Because the proper way to interrogate people is to separate them and then question them individually, compare their stories, see where the inconsistencies are, use those to figure out the truth. But if you just got one person, you know, like, even if you quote-unquote break them through torture or deprivation or whatever, how the fuck do you know that that was the authentic break and that they gave you real information? And this episode kind of highlights that. And I, like I said, I don't think the answers have been any better if she tortured him, or he tortured him, because he just doesn't know. He's got no baseline to know. And also, like, Michonne's like, you know, why is this my, is Michonne or Tara says this? I think it's Michonne. He's like, you know, why is it my responsibility to do this? She says, well, you're just a good judge of character. I feel like that kind of gets blown up too in this episode. Although I guess Daryl doesn't really trust her. He just kind of like... Yeah. Stops for the day.
Seems like it takes a break. Yeah, I think he's going to get the record player and a copy of Easy Street, and he's going to go to
town
on her.
That might do it. Yeah, yeah, that might do it. Of course, it didn't work on him, but yeah, maybe she's not made of as strong as stuff. But I like that them leaning tough on her was not immediately a font of accurate information.
Yeah. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. So then the doctor resets Eugene's knee. Eugene, worried that he might never get to say his piece if he doesn't do it now. Also probably realizing he's holding a pretty strong pity card at the moment, decides to make a play for Rosita. She does not stick around to hear it, though, leaving mid-sentence to vomit in the street, which before I found out the real reason, I was like, yeah, that seems right.
No, it's really funny. And what Eugene must think, too, before...
Because he can hear her retching in the street, right? They make that clear.
Yeah. Yeah, he has to. If he hears this whispered conversation between her and Sadiq where she's like, right. Look, I've literally slept with everyone but Eugene, and we can't let him know because it'll break his heart like it broke his knee. What the hell? Eugene, why? You know, she's with Gabriel. This is, I mean, I guess, shoot your shot. Tell someone how you feel, but come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than what he's been doing.
That's true.
But there was never a chance there. There was never a chance. Come on.
The putting the knee back in the socket was pretty gruesome. That was a lot of disgusting Foley that they were doing to crunch that thing back into place.
Yeah.
I think he might need more than 3 weeks of compression to be good as new.
I don't know. I'm telling you, out of socket stuff is not as bad as it sounds.
Huh.
It's painful.
I just feel like
Like
the ligaments would have to have stretched, maybe even torn, and like, yeah, you can get the thing into place, but like everything around it, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, and you know what? Sadiq is, so I'll just listen to him.
Sure. I'm sure all the writers who worked on Sadiq's dialogue are also doctors.
So she had an existing just fucking fuck buddy, friends with benefits relationship with Sadiq before Gabriel. Do you think Gabriel have a problem with this?
I mean... Is Gabriel going to have a problem that she was fucking Abraham? Like, it's before, right?
Well, that was years ago. I mean, I don't know. It just depends. I'm trying to gauge, like, because, like, Gabriel is a little stuffy and old-fashioned in a certain way.
Let's just say I don't think he has any right to be upset about it.
Oh, I agree. But I'm just, yeah, and I hope they don't because, like, you know, I've kind of sort of liked Gabriel, and that's, like, a very new thing for me. Like, I got a couple years of distance from his character, and I came back, and I'm like, oh, okay, he's kind of cool. But, yeah, if he starts that kind of, you know, jealous. I mean, fuck, Rick didn't even treat Shane like that. So,
yeah.
What are we going to do?
He fathered all of his kids, so. okay, yeah, so we didn't talk about this, but she says, yeah, she's pregnant and it's Sadiq's baby. And also Eugene hears that through the open window. It didn't really look open, but he heard it through the window.
That might be a key of why Eugene's taking the shot, because like it implies that this relationship with Gabriel is very new, like less than 2 months. So it's not maybe. And if Rosita has like these string of flings that she does, you know, no strings attached relationships, maybe Eugene thinks he can get... you know, hey, I'm going to make an emotional bid for the next one. So maybe it's not as like goofy as I thought.
I mean, it seemed ridiculous to me, like this whole thing.
He's punching way outside his weight class for sure. But, you know,
well,
that
I
happens.
I mean, as far as like the show perspective, like they've set up a love square, like the love triangle wasn't enough. They needed a fourth in the mix. One of them is pregnant with a former lover's baby. And like this is very, very soap opera.
I wonder like these are essentially medieval villages, right? And that was kind of like everyone does have to kind of match up or stay alone forever. I don't know, maybe they'll I don't know. Eugene's a lot to put up with for anybody.
Or if you're the 36-year-old Boston Rob, you can just hook up with the girl who just turned like 16 or whatever. Sure.
Right.
You gotta wait until they grow into it, I guess. Ugh. Okay, let's move on to digging Jesus' grave. Henry's breathing some free air, but he's got to go back into a cell for another night, and he apologizes for his stupid actions and wonders aloud who he is in this community. Really, really love the line from Daryl where Henry asks, does alcohol always make you feel this bad? And Daryl says, no, but acting stupid does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can drink alcohol and not feel like a wreck in the morning, but if you drink a stupid amount of alcohol, yeah.
And then
even if you avoid doing stupid things, you're still going to have a hellacious hangover. So
that's true.
Good. Yeah, Daryl's preaching moderation. Of course, he would have to. The man with zero kidneys.
Fair. Call but an endless Dos number of charcoal filled bottles, right? Like,
oh yeah, yeah, you can swap them out.
Sure, I assume that'd be easier than kidneys. A little more of a pain in the ass, but also reliable.
That's true. I just know if they're efficient, you know.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering. Like, it'd be funny to see just like little threaded tap come out. You can just screw on a new one, you know, when it gets too clogged up with alcohol. I don't know what the hell how kidneys work.
I mean, you can't tell me that they can build an entire mechanical hand, but they can't build a mechanical kidney for Daryl.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, shit, he could have 8 kidneys. Like, just how many bottles can you strap to him, right?
Well, that's, or like every time someone dies in the hilltop, they just do a cross match DNA thing and like, hey, there's 2 kidneys up for grabs. Who needs them? It's Daryl. You know, the man gave 2 kidneys. Let's give him 6. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure. Why not? But this Henry stuff, do you want to talk any more about it? Or, you know, Henry's just having a hard time figuring out who he is.
Yeah. I get that. You know, he had a very special role in the kingdom. He was the prince, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in here to Hilltop, he ain't shit. And the kids now hate him, and the adults aren't sure about him, and he's trying to do his virtuous thing where, you know, he blew up his relationship with the kids, but he's not going to snitch on them. So he's got to figure it out. And I really like the line later on with the Daryl delivers. Well, we'll wait to, I don't want to steal that scene's thunder.
Okay. Then we go back to Negan, who makes it to the sanctuary to find it completely abandoned. He smashes a wall, finds nothing useful. There's a bike back there, which I think he gets later, including a walker named Big Richie. Big Richie. I feel like you could maybe have had a more identifiable sanctuary member than Big Richie, who I've never heard of.
Just the dregs left now. Yeah, I actually looked it up to see if this guy was someone that we should have recognized, but no. I'm like, man, it's too bad that they didn't have one or two of the top lieutenants that kind of survived the conflict. Like, imagine Simon.
Right.
Imagine Zombie Simon showing up. That would be a real thing. Like, you could have like a whole monologue with him, but like Big Richie ain't shit, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm glad
he's not even
didn't...
that big.
Nah, he's like maybe even an inch shorter than, maybe that's the joke. Like, you know,
yeah.
There's Richie and he's a lot bigger than him. So they call him Big Richie as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I thought, it would have been painful to watch him try to build a relationship with this zombie that we don't even know.
Yeah.
So it was just another kind of like reminder that it gave him a shot in the arm because he had this kind of like gallows humor about, oh, look at you, loyal to the end. But you look around, the sanctuary is this damp, abandoned, just wreck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his legacy. And there's a lot of stuff here where he's like going around and seeing like the withered tomatoes and the abandoned potting, like this, like nothing could grow here.
Yeah.
You know, he's in this paradise civilization and he goes back to the thing that he founded and it's just a fucking a post-apocalyptic hellscape. And again, they don't make this point. It's all non-visual story, or it's all purely visual storytelling, but that's why it was really, really effective.
Right. Right. They exercised a little bit of restraint in this scenario.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan's good.
He's
a good actor. So like he's entirely capable of carrying these scenes where he's just walking through abandoned places. You know, it's like watching someone play The Last of Us, honestly.
Yeah, I can't help but notice I'm playing that currently.
Dude,
and there's just so many similarities.
Same. Yeah. Yeah. Like, when he's going through that sporting goods store, it's like, I was just there in Seattle, man.
or that scene where you're talking about interrogating prisoners, like there's a way to do this where if you have a couple of people, you can actually identify truth from fact. And it's good.
These video games teach us how to be psychopaths, Jim.
Sure.
We're
ready.
Ready
the apocalypse.
Yep. Going to be hard.
All right. Michonne packs up as, I'm going to call him One Hand Luke. I know this joke might not hit after potentially this being Cool Hand Luke instead of Two Hand Luke. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm talking about Aaron here. He apologizes for not being on board.
That metal hand, I mean, metal, probably cool to the touch.
Cool hand
Aaron.
Yeah.
For sure.
He apologizes for not being on board with her isolationist policies before now. And she says she's sorry for his loss of Jesus. Daryl comes down from his penthouse suite, which is just the loft in the barn.
I love it.
It's so good.
I love it. The whole, like, tell me you didn't sleep in there. It's like, what, the penthouse suite? Like, it's great. It's great. Oh, yeah. And it works because of these characters and how long we've known them.
They finally know what to do with Dirty Daryl. Like, just make him as like, loner, disgusting, like, you know, competent. And they've done that all throughout the series. But, like, yeah, just push him into a weird zone. I'm totally cool with Daryl going into that.
He's feral. Like, they probably poured him a hot bath and soft bed, and he went in there, looked at it, went, nah! And he went and went to the penthouse. Like, he's, uh-huh. I love it. I love it.
Michonne says she's worried that the search party hasn't returned yet and encourages Daryl to resort to extreme tactics to get the information they need out of their prisoner. I also love this pickup truck turned wagon that they're using. That's pretty awesome. And I didn't notice it before, but they must have been using it the last few episodes.
Which is hilarious because, like, the dude couldn't copy the wagon. Uh-huh. He's like, you know what I can do? I can cut this truck in half.
Uh-huh.
Weld a hitch to it. There you go. That's all you need. You don't need this Constantinople. You can't, too many syllables. You can't pronounce that. Truck wagon. That's what we want. It's like chuck wagon, only truck. It's a truck wagon. Oh, yeah. Boy. This is the least competent. Like, all he can make is wrought iron. Do you see the jail cell? It's just recycled wrought iron fencing. He can't even fucking be like cold rolled iron. He's got to go rot. Like,
he can't make a straight bar of steel.
No,
he can't do it. This blacksmith is
a barely he can barely manage hinges, apparently. So, like, yeah, this guy, if a real blacksmith ever shows up, he's going to be in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Or if Henry ever cracks a book, he's done.
It's true. He's coming for you.
Yeah. So this is a scene where I was worried that they're going to start moralizing over. You know, integrating new survivors. Like, Aaron's the new Michonne, Michonne's the new Aaron, and then Maggie's going to be back in another two seasons to start this whole process over again.
Right. Just in time for Tara to die. And
yeah, I hope that doesn't happen, but we'll see.
It seems like they're doing a lot better job of avoiding those, because there's so many places in the season where I've seen the exit ramp for them to go into the Walking Dead spiral, and they have refused to put on their turn signal, and they kept on trucking down the highway. So I'm hopeful that's, and honestly, the pacing in which they've revealed this kind of whisperer plot, I thought, has been really effective too. So
yeah,
I'm hopeful. I'm really enjoying where we're at right now.
I will say, this crew under Angela Kang has definitely got a stronger grasp on the fundamentals of storytelling.
Well, it's so funny because we just did this. Was it last? Yeah, it was last week we did the Chaos on the Bridge, a documentary on the first two seasons of Next Generation, and like everyone remarks at how much better this third season and on is from the first two seasons. And apparently, it was a showrunner that just came on and said, you know what? Instead of just doing like, you know, plot generated Planet of the Week, Monster of the Week bullshit, let's all focus it on the characters. Amazing. Uh-huh. And I feel like Kang's doing the same thing. Like, you know, what story are we wanting to tell about these characters? And how is the plot serving that? And it's just such a simple, it's just, you gotta it's always about the characters. That's why we watch these shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if we just want to watch stuff happen, we'd watch, you know, how does this get made? We'd watch Nova Channel, we'd watch documentaries and stuff, but we want to see characters interacting and prevailing and this, so far this season, they've given us a healthy dose of that.
And in between, you know, the big high emotional moments for characters, you can also do the stuff that we were talking about, like how do they build this community, you know, how do they build a windmill, how, like, all those little things that can't support a show on their own can add flavor to the, you know, the drama that the characters generate. Next up is Negan creating a living room in the abandoned sanctuary, then starts clearing the grounds of walkers, including Big Richie.
Poor Big Richie. We barely knew you.
yeah. I mean, it's you know, pretty clear, though it's not said, what Negan is feeling in this moment, right? We've talked about it before, and I don't want to go too long about it, but they do an effective job in these few scenes that they show with Negan, just showing him progressively more disillusioned with the old life, and the, you know, really just taking note of the impossibility of going back to that, even if he wanted to.
Yeah, like, how, what would you even do? Like, yeah. How do you, you know, get a crew? You lure him back to this place. It's a pile of shit. He sits at the head of his table, but he doesn't have a crew. Like, that. Like, when he says that, he kind of slumps and says, well, shit. Like, that was like, man, this, that damn. And plus, you know, that like, the words of Judith, you could tell, like, there's nothing for you out here. That's something. They didn't tell it, you know? I don't think they even told it once until the very end when he's actually telling Judith. But, like, I was thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when, well, let's get to the next scene.
And you can't help but also think about, you know, Judith's other words, if you come back here, I'm going to shoot you. And I believe her.
Right.
So he's thrown away a shot, right? Like, he had, he had... Yeah.
Hamiltoning again.
I know. I got Hamilton on the brain. I just watched it yesterday. he threw away his shot by leaving this community, refusing to stick around, become a better person. And he thought he was going to come back and be king shit of the sanctuary again. Turns out that was a pipe dream. And now he's not able to go back, right? You know, right. That's got to be what's going through his head. And I think, you know, he gets lucky by the end of the episode. But
and that's when he goes there and he goes out and clear... He clears the yard and then he looks at the compass and he said, Judith Grime, like, I just got this. This is like the last battle was fought like 7 years ago underneath that stained glass tree. But this is when Rick won the war. Like this moment right here where he's like, just this ain't working out. And he goes back like this is everything that Rick was trying to talk about and do. Like, this is him finally winning and defeating Negan, not just physically, not just militarily, but spiritually and emotionally too.
And ideologically, and like his idea of a community is better than Negan's. Like,
and it works better. Yeah. Negan's ideology leads to this. Rick's ideology leads to this flourishing wonderland. So it's really great narrative. Mm-hmm. Well done.
All right. The Hilltop holds a funeral for Jesus, which sends Daryl into the dungeon to interrogate the prisoner again. He growls at her. And she spills her guts, saying they wore the skins to stay safe because the walls weren't getting the job done. And it's an us or them world now. And he calls her a liar, but decides not to kill her, locking her back up instead. And before leaving, Daryl tells Henry to wise his ass up. And Daryl leaves. And then the prisoner thanks Henry for saving her. And they begin to bond. And Daryl thinks outside.
Yeah, I... obviously, there's a pack of lies being told by Lydia, if that is her real name. Mm-hmm. I don't think the ideology stuff is part of it. I think she gave that. That seems true. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, walls are not what make you strong. And people can't be trusted. So the zombies keep us safe and we keep them. But how do you live? Like, when do you eat? How do you take shits? What do you, like, I guess bathing's probably not a high priority. Yeah. But like, it's true. You could just take a shit. But like, are they eating people? Are just not? There's certainly not enough people in a, like, if a zombie herd falls upon a straggler and tear him apart, there's not enough food to feed all those people. So like, they have to have some place where they can go where they're physically safe, that they can do their human shit. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. Maybe it's just like they're not ever going to deal with that. It's just going to be rule of cool. It's just, but I wonder. I really do hope they answer some of these questions. Because if not, these things won't ever be as cool as I think they could be.
No, it's, I didn't even think about how they eat. Because, you can't eat in front of walkers. They'll know.
Or sleep. Like, when you mm-hmm. go off to, because you can't just walk tirelessly forever. There's a couple things that you have to do as a person that zombies are not going to give you a chance. And, like, how do you disengage? Like, so if you're in the middle of a zombie herd leading them around, how do you disengage from that?
Right.
Because if you peel off in a direction, they're going to peel off after you. Because just that's what
stop moaning. I guess you would trade, right? You'd be like, it'd be a shift change. So like you'd slow down. Someone else would take your place at the front who's fresh.
You
kind of
fall to the. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Keep leading. I wonder if that's what the circles are for. Like when they're milling around in a circle, if that's when like someone takes the lead and the other one falls back and then they lead them off and the other zombie just stands there.
And then I guess you could go get some food and some sleep, but.
Yeah, but where do you scavenge? Because you're not growing anything, and scavenging's got to be pretty tough to do nowadays. The food thing, I guess, is the biggest question, and I hope they deal with that.
Yeah, I don't know. The philosophy of them is interesting. They're they're kind of stuck, you know, oddly enough, in an old world mentality, like this us versus them. Like the worst of us in this world already think of the world in terms of us versus, or me versus Certainly. You, or us versus mm-hmm. them, that kind of thing. I guess the apocalypse just threatens to make that worse. And we've seen mm-hmm. some communities sort of double down on that, like a sanctuary. We've seen other communities, you know, flirt with the idea of not doubling down on that and then maybe doubling down on that anyway. Like Michonne yeah. seems to have, you know, been affected by Rick's disappearance into kind of doubling down on that idea. But yeah, it's, I don't know, the ways in which the apocalypse is influencing people differently is sort of interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, I think so. I think you're dead on.
And then I wonder in this scene at the end when Daryl leaves Henry and her alone and she begins bonding with him, is she playing him? Is Daryl playing both of them? Henry, I think, is the only one in this equation who doesn't have the ability to play anyone.
Yeah, no, he's
figuring
so
himself out. He doesn't have time to figure someone else out.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, is Daryl using Henry to, like, interrogate Lydia? You know, like, she's yeah. got to give him, like, she gave him already something that he didn't give. Now, it could, again, do I believe that her name is actually Lydia? On the other hand, I don't know. Also, that's kind of weird, too, that they don't have names. Why would that be useful in, like, it seems like having some kind of identifier that you could whisper to be like, hey, you, go left, I need a break. You know, what do you do if there's, like, 12 people here? Are you talking to me? No, the other person to your left. Like, what?
There are three people to my left. Who? Which one?
Yeah, but it also kind of reminds me of, like, Game of Thrones, The Unsullied, how, you know, they didn't have names. They just picked pebbles out of hats, and that was their, you know, oh, I'm Grey Worm today. You're red Flea or something. Maybe it's kind of like a dehumanizing, like, ultra collective, you know, that, like, we are a zombie, and what do zombies do? And like I said, that could be some interesting world building that they do too. I'm curious to see what happens with it. But if Daryl is using Lydia to kind of, or using Henry to kind of, like, as a wedge for getting information out of Lydia, pretty fucking smart.
And she could be doing the exact same, right? Like,
yeah,
using Henry True. To get information that she doesn't currently have about the community.
Yeah, I'm also wondering, like, what will Hilltop's appetite for being patient to let Daryl get the information out of? Because, like, they clearly want blood.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe maybe they'll need a hostage exchange, as we'll see in the scene up ahead.
Yeah, Brett Butler inciting violence once again.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to be an antagonist.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice that we got a familiar face that, like, some now in the Hilltop, we know there are people and they've got names. And even Boston Rob, it's going to be harder and harder to call him Boston Rob because they said his name like 12 times this episode.
Right. I still don't remember it, but because I was thinking Boston Rob every time they said it.
His name is Aldon.
Aldon?
He's Aldon. It's you know, because he just idolizes Don Draper. So yeah, tells people to call me All Don. Yeah.
Okay. That explains the greased back hair. Okay. Let's go to Negan riding his bike on the open road where somehow Judith is waiting for him. She blasts the bike out from under him. And then he it's gives her back sweet. Her compass. Says she was right. There's nothing outside of Alexandria for him. I
also like the I'm sure it's like, you know, I told you, I'd shoot you if you came back. He's like, sure as shit. And she's like, language. I'm a kid, asshole. I don't know. I'm a sucker for that stuff. It reminds me of Goonies, to be honest.
Hmm. Yeah, this scene just felt weird to me. I don't know. How fast is he driving down this road? She blasts the bike out from under him. He's fine.
Yeah.
He's talking to a girl who seems to be, you know, so young, she shouldn't be able to deliver insightful wisdom about the world to a man 50 years her senior or whatever. I don't know. How did she find him? Who let her out?
I think that, like, they mentioned that, like, the whole community's out looking for him because everyone's aware that he's escaped now.
The entire community. They left no one in Alexandria to guard the gate.
All the heavy hitter. Well, all that they left behind was Gabriel, right? When they all went out to do the hilltop thing, wasn't that established? So, like, it's Gabriel and a bunch of mooks that are out holding Alexander's, that are all out. And she's also, I'm willing to say that Judith might be the anti-Carl. The reason it was a bad idea to let Carl run out is because he was a child of the old world that didn't understand how dangerous it was. And it was uniquely a Lori thing in that community to let him run wild. Like, Judith is a lot like all these kids. Well, maybe except for the sheltered hilltop kids. But, like, Judith seems like she's always got a sword and a gun. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy to let a 10-year-old girl run around with that big of a gun. They do it, so she also goes on raids and, like, you know, patrols the area with the adults. Like, I feel like she's just, like, a little woman, you know? And that's okay. What reminds me of, like, my niece, because, like, you know, my niece is, like, gets up at 6 a.m. and does chores and shit. Like, you know, mucks out horse stables and things. Like... Nice. And it reminds me of like the little kids in like the Master and Commander series. It's like if you start working at 5 or 6, you know, by the time you're 9 or 10, you might have a surprising amount of adult skill sets just because you pick it up. You know, you're still like, I also think that they do show Judith of being a little naive, because this could have gone a different way. Like Negan could have gone out there, found his bat, started, you know, rounding up a crew and returned with a vengeance. And then Judith would be the stupid little girl. So sure. I don't know, she's just a right blend of naive but also clearly capable, because I don't know, that's the way Michonne raised her, to be tough and resilient. So I and yeah, I'll also let it, it's Hollywood and the rule of cool. Like, I would much rather see this type of girl than, like, you know, what was the one that Carol had to blow the head off of, you know? Look at the flowers, what's your face,
yeah, Lizzie.
That sounds, yeah, right. I'd much rather see that than another crazy kid that is, you know, can't be controlled, or a kid that's like just doesn't know their ass from a hole in the ground. Like, I'd rather them go air and make her a little bit too badass and adult than make her too annoying and stupid. So
sure,
good job Judith Grimes for taking care of Negan here.
I mean, yeah, she definitely handles him. not sure how she found him, but sure.
I also love how the gun, just like the recoil, just like it just blow, it's just her arms go right up to the sky when she shoots it. Like, it's, yeah, yeah. It's, she's not one handing it like old Rick did.
Yeah. So the prison tats join Zenit on the wall, and they bond over their mutual fear that their slam pieces won't return from the mission. Nothing much to say about that scene.
All new love, Gabriel and Rosita, Enid and Boston Rob, apparently Magna and the professor, they're all just coupled up in the last few weeks or so. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. It'll make a lot of romance at this fair if everyone makes it through, Jim. A real magical time.
I cannot wait for this fair. Symphony
like
of Riverdale
awesome. Episode. Do you think they'll do it like in the soft lighting? There'll be candles everywhere and people will be dancing and... Rosita's got her arms around Gabriel.
Well,
and
I'm hoping to see a whole like day to night transition, which is something, you know, The Walking Dead doesn't traditionally do.
yeah.
But I'd like There's to no see a fair that extends from, you know, the mid-afternoon until the late evening. And we can get, you know,
a
couple
for days.
Yeah, you have the mellow stuff later at night, but you have the craziness during the day. People are partying.
Yeah, you got tournaments and mock combat and wrestling matches and knife juggling, and then at night it's all about, now I guess
it's all about kazoos and
I was
going to
say, if it's all going to be a bunch of the Chumbawamba kazoo harmony band, then that's not that's two of the romantic partners out there performing and not dancing. So
they can do their performance during the day. We can bring in the record player for the nighttime event.
Well, if the Whisperers join them, maybe it'll be like, you know, Boston Rob's like, he's got the kazoo. He's like, hey, I need a break. He hands the kazoo off to the lead Chumbawamba, and he just kind of falls to the back, and then he starts dancing. This is, sure. You know, it's an eternal rager. You just go work it in shifts. Whisperers will teach him that.
I don't know. Whatever they do. I just hope they
have
fun.
That's the key party adaptation. That's the key party adaptation that you gotta do the rager in shifts, man. You gotta just like, you know, as some people fall back, other people gotta step up, keep it going.
For sure. So the last scene is Symphony of Awesome surrounded by a group of intelligent walkers who have been luring them in with the arrows. Turns out this was not Yumiko. This was there are some incredible leaps, some incredible assumptions they have to make that the two-hand Luke here would know what Yumiko's arrows look like in such detail that he could say this is a trail. But they have to believe that, right? They don't know anything about their relationship. They know nothing about these people. They have to assume, okay, they're going to know that these arrows are a trail.
And she shot a bunch of them. I mean, it seems like plausible. It seems like something that these zombies would try as a gambit, and I also thought there's a beautiful establishing shot. We just complained that we don't see dawn. Well, here they were out there through the night, had to spend the night because they let the zombie herd divide them, and we see the sun coming up behind the trees. It's kind of shining through there. I thought that was a really nice establishing shot. That, like, this is early in the morning. So I'm wondering if the lead zombie here that says the trail ends here is this Lydia's mom, the lonely old nice lady in the woods stuck here, or
well, I was thinking that when they first encountered them and there was one that they showed, I was like, okay, this must be your mom. But then they showed a whole bunch of them, so I don't
know. Yeah, and no real zombies around, so there has to be a way for them to detach and do non-zombie stuff. Again, can't wait to find out more about these people. Like, these are the opposite of the trash people. I want to know everything about them, or the trash people. Just let's not. Oh, God, we're at the dump again.
Yeah, it seems to me fundamentally stranger to live in a junkyard and develop a trash religion than to wear the skins of walkers for some reason.
Yeah, because what is the point of the other? Like, they're just doing trash art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a viable lifestyle, I guess. It's like an eternal, stinkier Burning Man versus this is an ideology. The world's changed. It's ran by the zombies, so we can either beat our head against this new world order or we can fucking join them. And it's like a rational choice in this crazy world. It's not the one I would like to make. I'd like to try to make the Alexander thing happen, but I can see a person doing that, especially if some of the other stuff that Lydia was saying, if that is her real name, is true too, about like how if you go and like you try camp after camp, wall after wall, kind of like the fucking new guys did. You know, the idea that like, oh, we're going to finally find the one that's safe versus, you know what, let's just dress up like zombies. You can't beat him, join him. I just think it's interesting.
And I do wonder if there's going to be a little bit of a philosophical argument that they're going to have over that, because like you mentioned, those new people, you know, they've made a point of saying like, oh, this is going to be just like the last place and the place before that, and the place before that. So, and that's been true of even our survivors, right? Every time they get to a terminus or a Woodbury, they realize, oh, actually this isn't heaven, it's hell. They could definitely go down that road again.
In an early goings of Alexander, when Negan showed up, it turned that paradise turned into a hell real quick. So the what they got at Hilltop and Alexander right now, very much an aberration.
This seems to be the season of search parties. I think we've had at least three already, and surely Enid and Prison Tats are going out for their slam pieces, right? Like, next episode, for sure, they're out the gates.
Yeah, and it's also a good way to get the gang back together because, you know, you've got this isolationist stance. Well, what can possibly bring them out? Well, if they're always looking for people that are important to them. Yeah. And it's also, you know, like, I think the temptation would be let the FNGs go out and do it themselves, but then they've been such model citizens that the rest of the people are going to be compelled to go out and probably help them. But I don't know. There's like with this Whisperers leading these masses of zombies against like these walled cities, it reminds me a lot of like Helm's Deep and the middle Lord of the Rings film. Like, I could imagine teeming throng of zombies marching on these walled cities at night. It's raining. They're led by I think this is going to be fucking cool. Right into Walking Dead's execution wheelhouse.
I feel like at some point, when did you cut your losses? You send out a search party, that search party goes missing. You send out another search party, they lose a member, come back with one, there's still another out there. Send another
probably
search party.
Probably pretty quick. Especially since isolationist, it seems like it's the dominant theory right now.
And I think it's like kind of the ultimate. Like, what are the what are the Whisperers going to do if you just stay behind your gated walls and live your life in your community? Like, they're not going to come to your walls because that's where you just destroy them, right? Like,
I don't know.
They would have to try, I guess, to wrangle up enough walkers to bust down your walls.
Yeah, which I think would be, like, if you had 1,000 walkers and you put them in the one spot, and even if, like, they successfully killed them all, you build, like, you know, a World War Z-style ramp of dead zombies. Like, that's the thing. The reason zombies are not as big a threat is because they're stupid. Mm. The second they can be directed, then they can be kind of scary. And I, like I said, that's... It's a really nice innovation, and hats off to old Robert Kirkman for coming up with this before he apparently ran out of ideas, I guess. Because it's my understanding The Walking Dead stopped well short of its promised story arc conclusion. Yeah. But I mean, this is a pretty impressive late game innovation, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, like you've had human threats, you've had zombie threats. You know, the idea that you can direct and it's just something that naturally evolved out of the rules of the universe that they've already taught us about how zombies work. So I pretty impressive late game pull.
And that's it. The episode is over.
Yeah, that does wrap things up. If you walk to send feedback, you can do so at walkingdead@baldmove.com, watchingdead@baldmove.com. You can also discuss the latest episode and your thoughts on it and our coverage overall at our forums at forums.baldmove.com, and of course follow along everything we do at baldmove on social media if you want to not miss the latest release and all the new stuff we're working on, because we're doing new stuff all the time, as we've alluded to and throughout this episode. It feels good to be, like, honestly excited to watch the next episode of The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. So I might have to start watching these 2 or 3 times.
Oh no!
Yeah. I'm really digging it, man. I couldn't bear to miss a bicycle powered washing machine because I'm taking notes or something. I gotta drink it all in.
There's some correlation here between your renewed interest in The Walking Dead and the abject lack of television on right now.
You might not be too far wrong. You know, if you've been subsisting on stories that you've already watched many times before to get any kind of and something, anything dramatically interesting and new with familiar characters, you might be onto something, Jim. You might be onto something.
Could be.
But we'll be back next week. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.